sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Good shooting, John. That seemed to be right on target.
I have got them in my sights, Stan. I'm John Kurlinski.
I am Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle,
where we take lighthearted looks at the serious issues of evolution and creation lighthearted because it's just a lot more fun, even though sometimes we do get serious, like last week. But this week, we are going to continue on maybe a little more lightheartedly or a little more seriously, depending on where the information
the
spirit leads us. Yes.
Yeah, lighthearted looks and lighthearted pokes also at evolution, and we are short-age creationists, but that's who we are, and we can't help it.
We're in our third, actually, in our series based on a wonderful article by James Gibson, Dr. Gibson, a scientist from the Geoscience Institute in Loma Linda, California, and he has written an article found in Ministry Magazine, a journal for pastors, to kind of help them get an understanding, which is not normally a ministry-type article, but creation evolution are ministry issues in our world.
Very much so.
And so he said an article there that analyzes the science's reaction and criticisms of the design or creationist movements.
We've been talking about criticism, shall we say, of the intelligent design people, and in particular, what intelligent design would bring to the science table, basically the worries of materialistic evolutionists.
And they are worried.
They're worried. We got them worried.
We got them worried. They're on the run. We got them running, boys. Not quite, but they are responding back.
Yeah.
They are writing articles. They are they're hiring the lawyers to challenge it in court. They are writing the briefs for these lawyers as design is trying to be introduced
in Delaware,
Pennsylvania, Kansas, or wherever. And the last criticism we're going to deal with in this series of these little short mini Sink the Beagle series on this article is criticism number 7 in this little article it's called. But anyway, it's the one that says, accepting design or creationism or most
belief,
here,
in a God.
Belief in a God will overturn all of science.
Oh, man, it's all going to fall down.
There goes my grant dollars. There goes my Beamer. My wife's really going to be mad. Save my science.
You know, and what's kind of funny is Pinnock.
R.F. Pinnock
wrote an article about this whole subject. A book. And in which case he was saying, you know, If we let intelligent design people get their way in science, science will fall apart. And you know what? Society will fall apart, too. Society will be harmed if we let these intelligent designers have their way.
It'll create chaos, leaving all religious speculations to take the place of rigorous inquiry that somehow religion and speculation are somehow inferior to. And that's not speculation here, but religious beliefs would be, you know, to take the place of rigorous inquiry.
Well, you know, you'd let dopes like us into the room and so forth. And you know, this is an interesting one because accepting design would overturn all of science, they say.
No.
I don't know.
No, that's not necessarily true. The mere fact that accepting design would force a change in scientific methodology or scientific conclusions is really, first of all, it's irrelevant. If design is true, and there is a designer, and if its acceptance would radically alter the way science is done, well, then the sooner the change takes place, the better.
Okay.
That's one argument.
If it's true, it's better to get science on truth and wherever else it's going.
Off its own speculation. But on the other hand, it's also a great exaggeration that all of science would be overturned by an acceptance of design.
Okay, how so?
Well, there's really, when you start looking at science, and creationists look at science, and we don't say science is bad and all the things we have in science. No, we like Pop-Tarts. We like
CDs
and computers and fun. The whole point is that there's two types of science. There is the empirical, experimental sciences, which often lead to technological advances, medical advances.
And that's what I think of in science, because as I was growing up and as I was a geology major at UC Riverside, that's what I thought science was, you know, laboratories and observing phenomena and repeating experiments and so forth to see if things were so. If they repeated, if you always did A and B together, then you would have C outcome. That was science to me.
Yeah. And that science still goes on.
Uh-huh.
An explanation of intelligent design would really affect experimental science not at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for one reason, that if its design is true and God is true and he's the one who designed this world,
right,
he's the one that set up certain laws that allow the regularities to occur in the first place.
So there's going to be laws no matter what.
No matter what. Mm-hmm. They're all God's laws, whether it be his laws of nature or his laws of scripture.
So A plus B causing C would be true whether it's design or not design? How would that be overturned if we suddenly got a designer in there?
Yeah, and it wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And so any irregularities, because there would be, if God is allowed in the picture, we realize that the Bible records miracles happening.
Mm-hmm.
And these are singularities. These are things that don't happen regularly,
yes,
where God seems to intervene. And the only explanation would, and being singularities, you're never going to be able to find patterns to investigate them.
Mm-hmm. You know, we call those irregularities, we call those miracles, and that's, you know, a temporary cessation of a natural law. And God does demonstrate in the history of this planet that he is above the law that he has created. And generally, when that happens, there's a real point. And I remember a professor once said to me that God believes in the law of the conservation of miracles. That is, that generally he operates through laws, but there are times when he wants to demonstrate his power above laws.
Or maybe... Mm-hmm. Maybe is it? And I reflected on this. Just came into my brain, which may be a scary thought. But the point is that maybe God, when he does miracles, is really operating within his own character and nature, and really what he's doing is he's withholding his blessings and withholding the things he would love to do according to his character and nature, mm-hmm, because of this, what we talked about last week, this great controversy picture,
mm-hmm,
and that he is not acting
Lucifer's
as he would love to act.
And the issues that have been raised by the rebellion.
God
Lucifer
would like to end the whole controversy now, end the evil, end the suffering,
mm-hmm,
but he's restraining himself from bringing about that end till the conviction comes that either people need God or the conviction comes that sin's a bad idea, that mm-hmm, evil's a bad idea.
Well, there's no question that God, in the world of the spirit world, as sometimes the scripture references, angels are ministering spirits and so forth. There seems to be another dimension or another plane of reference that God and angels seems to occupy that don't necessarily yield themselves to scientific understanding. And it may be just what you say, that there is a plane of existence that God simply hasn't revealed yet. That is maybe the natural way the universe works.
And God's pulling and saying, okay, no, we can't run this machine machine. We can't run this policies and procedures here, mm-hmm, as normally would like to, because we are still dealing with this issue.
We got
a virus here we're dealing with.
We got a problem, Houston.
You know, there's another thought, though, too. And when you get into this idea, and this is a whole kind of a tangent going off the
not one of those
off of our criticism here or answering to the criticism, mm-hmm, of science, is that science is really struggling ethically right now. What technological advances are truly good? You know, what determines what is good in science? In other words, science makes a great tomato picker.
Okay.
As a result of that, though, mm-hmm, they had to make a tomato less flavorful that could stand the abuse of the tomato picker, which allowed them to grow tons of tomatoes cheap.
Okay.
And color them and spice them and turn them into ketchup. But it also disenfranchised thousands of workers, taking away jobs where they could feed their families or do other things. So everyone,
a
moral element of the, mm-hmm, impact of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And in some respects, there's an element of technology where man has, even because he's able to do these things, has sort of said, oh, we don't need God now. We can solve our own problems apart from God,
mm-hmm,
just by our sheer tech. Give us some time, we'll figure it out, has been the attitude of science.
Okay.
And maybe there's an element of that attitude attitude needing to be rethought too, and God allows certain things like when you discover nuclear theory, you get bombs that can kill as well, besides energy that can be created.
Well, ultimately, God placed the world under the dominion of Adam and Eve, and we are responsible stewards, or we should be, of the things that are on this planet and our understanding of what we can do with it.
And we're not really doing as good a job. We always muck it up, and we think we got one technological marvel in advance. It actually has ramifications which are bad. And where do you balance it all? And who is to be the arbiter? You know, is science, and it's not really a good judge at all. And so thus, you know,
I'll be happy to do it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll step in.
That is true. We could make those decisions.
Yeah, we could do that.
Okay. All right. Thus, you know, really, in that sense, science has not impacted that greatly, though, is the point we're making. Technological, empirical science. However, science is impacted when you talk about historical science. The sciences that want to extrapolate from current process back into history and say that things were this way this time ago when no one was really there to observe or measure or see if indeed that is the case.
What we sometimes forget is that certain areas of science, certain branches of science, are given an awful lot of leeway in coming up with theories and explanations and just their own work. And I think in particular of paleontology and
biology to a degree.
Sciences that deal with questions of origin and you know, which require an awful lot of philosophy to come and kind of make some sense out of things. And to the extent that philosophy replaces empiricism as sort of the basis of a science is where we get into the muddy waters. And here is where, in particular, and I think this is reasonable, when philosophy is part of the picture, there's no question that intelligent design would impact those kinds of fields of science.
It's interesting when you start doing a study of science and when you start studying the scientific community, the irony is that you'd think from our perspective that most of your atheists would be your geologists and that, or your biologists. The irony is, you know where most of your atheists are in science? They are in the fields of psychology and sociology. When they've and those are the people who really haven't figured out the nature of suffering or evil or whatever, and they have become the most godless when they try to apply sciences to very unscientific process of purpose and meaning and explanations for good and moral values.
Which shows you the weakness of science in a lot of ways. And even scientists themselves say that religious people ought to stick into the bigger questions of, you know, morality and so forth. And actually, science already delves into that and even suggests answers for it when they stick to pure materialism. Because if they're materialists alone, then they're leaving it up to us to decide what's right and wrong. And, you know, survival of the fittest may be the motivation for us to come up with answers.
Yeah. And so really, in the end, we think that it's time, you know, that hey, let's get on with the argument of design. Maybe we can turn some sciences upside down. And we have a torpedo text, which I think reflected an early Christian viewpoint when it was dealing with the atheistic scientific culture in the book of Acts. That there was this Jason. I believe it's Acts 17, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and here is where the exclamation is, "These who have turned the world upside down have come here too," verse 6. And talking about Christians who have turned the world upside down. Well, you know, I mean, creationists today are turning the world upside down. We're trying to get God a little bit back in the picture of origins and where he ought to be as the creator.
And as man has, over history, has departed farther from that God, the world has tried to right itself based on a humanistic philosophical dog-eat-dog materialistic bent, and it is the world of Christians, in a sense, in that respect, too, by their loving reflection of their Creator, by their by their compassionate witness, and just and their good science and their good reasoning to give a reason to believe and like I say, rewrite the world according to what God would like it to happen.
And that's what we hope we can accomplish here on the next few weeks of Sink the Beagle. So we hope you turn in. Don't forget, turn in to Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time to another episode of Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.